Welcome to Open Minds, the weekly sermon podcast from Christ Church Anglican Cathedral in Vancouver, Canada. Reflections provoking thought at the intersection of faith and culture.
In March of this year, I went down to Austin, Texas to be a workshop leader at a conference. And at that conference, the keynote speaker on the Saturday night of the weekend was Nadia Boltz-Weber. Now, some of you might be familiar with Nadia Boltz-Weber's work. She rose to prominence as a Lutheran church planter, and she wrote extensively about her work in founding the community of the Church of All Sinners and All Saints. And she's now a very sought-after writer and speaker all around the world. Now, she began her keynote address on the Saturday night with some attention-grabbing words. She told the gathered audience that she is really struggling right now with being a Christian. Now, she was quick to clarify that her problem with being a Christian isn't about Jesus. She actually feels like she and Jesus are pretty good right now. Her problem with being a Christian is the Christians. She struggles with being a Christian because of the Christians. Now, I felt like there was kind of this ripple of electricity that went through the audience when she said that, because I think it really resonated with the people who were gathered. It resonated into a political climate where it seems like the loudspeaker that keeps getting put on the voice of faith suggests that faith is a lot about anger and hatred and division. Her words made me think about my own experience, particularly when I was in my early 20s, and I was pretty reticent to define myself any longer as a Christian, not so much because of the Christians that I actually knew, but because at the time I was a student of history and I was becoming more and more aware of just how much blood has been shed down across the millennia in the name of God. This past weekend, I was hanging out at a cottage with some new acquaintances who would probably mostly fall into the category of the de-churched, and their analysis of the church pretty much fits with what Nadia Boltz-Weber was getting at too. Their analysis was, church, not such a bad message. Terrible marketing. Really bad representation of what it's all about. It's really been tainted by all of those voices of division and hate down across the years. Nadia Boltz-Weber's analysis was that there are lots of people out there for whom Jesus isn't really the problem. It's Jesus' followers. Now, this gets pretty tricky when we're talking about faith, because the thing that we learn really early on in the gospel accounts of Jesus' life is that if you want to count yourself as a follower of Jesus, the community comes with it. When Jesus shows up on the scene and begins his public ministry and he proclaims, "The kingdom of God has come near," the first thing that he does is start to build a community of relationships around that proclamation. In tonight's gospel passage, we're partway into the Gospel of Luke, and what we get is a really critical moment. Scholars will point to this moment in the Gospels as a critical piece in the longevity of the Jesus movement. Because what we have here is Jesus doing some succession planning. He realizes that in order for the message to get as far as it needs to get, other people need to get on board with this too. And so he gathers this group of 70 apprentices. He mentors them, and then he sends them out two by two to share the message. And he sends them out with some pretty clear instructions, some pretty simple instructions, really. They're just supposed to go everywhere. They're supposed to go everywhere. It's not up to them to figure out where and with whom this message is going to connect. In fact, we find out in other parts of the gospel account that they go into Samaritan villages, they go into Gentile households. So they're going into communities and households of people whose faith is very different from their own. And they're supposed to do that. They're supposed to be pretty indiscriminate in sharing this gospel because it's not up to them to figure out who it's going to connect with. Each and every place that they go, the thing that they're supposed to offer is God's peace, the peace that they've received, they share with others. And if that peace connects, then they are to look with expectation for how God is going to provide abundantly in their midst. And if it doesn't connect, then they're just supposed to shake off the dust and move on. Don't carry it with you. It's not about you. Keep on. The timing for this apprenticeship, it's really important because we have just learned at this point in the gospel that Jesus has set his face toward Jerusalem. Now, what that means is that Jesus understands, it's actually pretty obvious, that opposition to him is heating up and it's getting organized. He also understands that the faithful thing to do is not to run away from that opposition, but to confront it, to bring to light the brokenness around him. So he's begun to speak pretty openly to his disciples that in Jerusalem he is going to suffer and die. That means, any way you slice it, including the resurrection appearances, it means that the flesh and blood, physical existence of Jesus, those days are numbered. Jesus, as a flesh and blood, physical entity, does not have that long to connect with that many people. And at the same time as his time is running out, the things that people are saying about Jesus are becoming more and more astonishing. They're starting to say that he is the Messiah, that he is Lord, that he is the revelation of God's loving presence. Coming up, they're going to begin to say that he was crucified and that he rose from the dead. And as they say these more and more astonishing things, this reality begins to emerge that for most believers, in most times and places, it's not going to be an eyewitness experience with the flesh and blood Jesus that is going to allow us to believe these things. For most believers, in most times and places, our belief has to be mediated through the belief of others. Now, when I consider that truth, I can't help but to have the words of Nadia Boltz-Weber ringing in my ears. And I have to think, this was a crazy plan. I sort of want to get in a time machine, go back to first century Palestine and shake Jesus by the lapels and say, you need a plan B. And yet, And yet the amazing, improbable thing is that it worked. And it is working. And somehow or other, the fact that here we are gathered on the other side of the world in 2019, like 2,000 years later, and we might still consider ourselves followers of Jesus, and there's no clearer reality, there's no clearer witness of the truth that somehow or other, it did work. Through this unqualified group of 70 people, somehow or other, a template was created, and the life of Jesus did get transferred into the life of community, and it did get passed along even to us today. I've been thinking about Nadia's words a lot over the last couple of months. And I've been thinking about how she does speak the truth, and sometimes the biggest barrier to faith can be the believers. She speaks the truth, but she doesn't speak the whole truth. And it's not the whole truth for me. One of the things that I'm doing here in Vancouver is I'm on a bit of a book tour promoting my publication, The Living Diet. And in that book, I talk about an experience of dealing with an eating disorder. And I describe a journey of healing that very much was mediated for me by the life of the church. Because even as I was most imprisoned by those lies that we get told, that my body would only be good enough when my waistline was smaller, that my relationship with food was best when I restrained myself from eating it, even when I was most fully locked in those lies, week in and week out, there was a community of faith around me that was living a very different story. A story of how we can gather around God's table, how we can put out our hands, how we can receive food as God's generous and gracious gift to us, how we can receive that gift of food as a sign of God's love and a promise of how we are loved. And somehow in being fed, we can then be sent, much like those 70, we can be fed and be sent out to be people who feed others. There are more times than I can tell you about when actually the thing that I've struggled with is Jesus. I've wandered in the wilderness of doubt and uncertainty, not knowing exactly what I believe about all of those astonishing things that we say about Jesus. And somehow it's been the believers around me that have kept me close, that have shown me what it is to live generous and grateful lives, to put love into concrete actions of care. And somehow there's stories of how God has shown up for them as a source of healing and guidance when they've been at their most brokenhearted. Somehow their stories of faith have helped me to believe even when I don't know what I believe. I'm not just here in Vancouver because of my book. I'm also here in Vancouver as a delegate of General Synod. General Synod is the national meeting for the Anglican Church of Canada. It generally happens once every 3 years. And we gather to discern and decide and pray about matters that are connected to the church all across Canada. I think that it would be fair to say that I am not the only one who goes into this general synod meeting with some trepidation. Because it seems to me that the church's witness could go either way this week. That is to say that it could be that in our meeting this week, belief becomes possible in new ways. It could be that the message of the church this week puts up a barrier to belief. We hope this week that we will be voting on a series of motions that is going to put concrete steps in place toward Indigenous self-determination. Concrete steps on the road to reconciliation, taking seriously the leadership of our Indigenous brothers and sisters and adapting our power structures in the church in order to make room for shared leadership in our church. It's our hope this week that we might be able to expand the church's stated definition around marriage in order to not just tolerate and not just include, but actually celebrate and recognize LGBTQ2 relationships. Those are a few of the items in front of us this week that are likely to get the most attention and airtime. And yet it's also possible this week that what the world is going to see most about our church is that we're stuck and that we're divided. I go into this meeting this week with trepidation. But I also go into this week with the hope that I see in tonight's gospel, which is that somehow or other, those 70 people, unqualified, now anonymous to us, somehow or other, God did work in and through them. And God has worked in and through ordinary people like me and you down through the ages in order to share and make known and invite people into the life of Jesus. And somehow in that hope, somehow in that witness, somehow there has to be a promise. A promise to us tonight, us this week, us as a church, us in the General Synod, somehow there has to be a promise to us too.
Thanks for listening to the Open Minds podcast. For more information on the Cathedral, its ministries, and how you can get involved, go to www.thecathedral.ca.